America's railroads are in trouble. There have been a series of fiery crude oil accidents on freight lines, and a mid-May derailment of a speeding Amtrak passenger train outside Philadelphia killed at least 8 people and shut down the popular service between New York and Washington, D.C. for days. But perhaps an even bigger problem for Amtrak is money. This year, Congress granted additional temporary funding to keep federal highway construction moving forward, but it chopped Amtrak's subsidy once again. Highways, airports, and public transport all receive federal subsidies, but in the view of John Oliveri of the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, passenger rail is woefully underfunded. John, welcome to Living on Earth.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
John, where does the U.S. stand compared to other countries in terms of rail technology, infrastructure, and funding?
Well, the U.S. is falling way behind when it comes to rail funding and transportation infrastructure, and specifically falling way behind when it comes to the development of high-performance rail. Other countries have invested heavily in the development of high-speed rail. Japan has a train that goes 374 miles an hour. The Eurostar travels from London to Paris at 200 miles an hour. These trains have a safety record that is absolutely stellar. Yet we here in America are shocked to discover that a train was going 106 miles an hour. That is not a particularly fast speed in many other parts of the world. And we need to get to a point where our transportation system enables trains to be able to travel faster than 106 miles an hour in a safe manner.
In the wake of the Philadelphia crash, there's been criticism that despite receiving billions of dollars from Congress over recent years, Amtrak hasn't put this funding into action. How do you respond to this?
Well, I think it's an unfair criticism. Amtrak has growing ridership. In the last fiscal year alone, 30.9 million passengers have taken Amtrak, and about 11.6 million passengers have taken Amtrak in the Northeast Corridor. So Amtrak is providing a product that is clearly in demand. And when we look at the level of subsidies that Amtrak and other rail services are being offered relative to forms of transportation like building new and wider highways, what we actually find is that rail is getting a much lower subsidy than driving. So, for example, you know, the intercity rail system receives about $1.50 in subsidies from each American, whether or not they take rail on a daily basis or on a weekly basis. But you know, if you compare that to the subsidies that our highway system receives, our highway system receives about $1,100 a year from each person, regardless of whether or not they drive a little bit or a lot. In 2013, driving received about $69 billion in subsidies. That's more than Amtrak has received in its entire 40-year history.
Just a few hours after the crash outside Philadelphia, Congress actually cut funding for Amtrak. What do you make of that?
Amtrak is not paid for in the way that we pay for other transportation priorities through the Surface Transportation Act. Amtrak is authorized yearly in a separate appropriations bill, and that bill is the subject of perennial debate and discussion. There are those in the Congress that feel that we shouldn't be spending any money on public transportation. This annual reauthorization provides ample ground for those critics to go out there and espouse those beliefs. I think it's unbelievable that the House would vote to cut Amtrak funding just out hours after such a tragedy has occurred.
So how has the congressional propensity to restrict funding affected Amtrak's ability to allocate money where it's needed?
This is really a key point. Because Amtrak is authorized yearly rather than in longer increments as we do with some of our, you know, our roads and our bridges, it becomes next to impossible for those at Amtrak to sufficiently plan for the transportation system that we're all going to need for the future. When we have discussions about wouldn't positive train control have prevented this devastating injury, you know, how can we expect those at Amtrak to be able to fully implement such a complicated system when they don't know where their next dime is coming from year to year?
John, how should we upgrade our current rail system to make it safer and more efficient?
I start with the proposition that our rail system is experiencing record high ridership and is strongly projected to grow. Ridership has almost doubled since the year 2000, and growth has continued to be projected. So when we look at what investments are going to be needed, what we see is that in the Northeast Corridor, for example, in order to meet this projected future demand and in order to achieve a state of good repair, Congress is going to need to invest about an estimated $10 billion over the next 15 years. And that's probably a conservative estimate. You know, in 2007, Amtrak issued the Northeast Corridor Infrastructure Master Plan, and that put the total needed for investment closer to $52 billion.
What's the return on investment in rail infrastructure versus fixing the highways?
Well, fixing the highways is a different question from expanding the highways. And unfortunately, all too often, we sacrifice dollars at the federal and the state level that are probably best put towards fixing our crumbling bridges in our infrastructure. And instead, we build new and wider highways. The major return on an investment, I don't think, is necessarily a monetary one, though there are certain economic benefits to being able to move goods efficiently. I think the most important return on the investment from rail really comes for what it can do for our society. Right? So rail is a way of increasing energy efficiency. And when we compare rail to other forms of transportation, such as driving, we see that we get the best bang for our buck by putting our dollars into increasing rail than to building that next highway, which may be of questionable value.
So compare the carbon footprint of passenger rail to the automobile and bus and so on and so forth.
So rail is significantly more energy efficient than other modes of transportation, and it also has significantly lower carbon footprint. What we find when we look at rail is that light rail produces 62% less CO2 emissions per mile than a single occupancy vehicle would. Another way of putting this is that the average passenger car in the U.S. produces just under 1 pound of carbon dioxide per mile, whereas a commuter rail or a light rail transit only produces about a third of a pound per mile. So there are substantial benefits to be had by investing more money in rail and making sure that we as American people opt for that form of transportation when it is available to us.
John Oliveri is 21st Century Transportation Campaign Director for the U.S. Public Interest Research Group. John, thanks so much for taking the time today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.